This week on Art of the Air features Northwest Indiana Post Graffiti Abstract Expressionist artist Ish Mohammed, whose work has been exhibited nationally, next to the directors and cast of Highland Performing Arts summer musical production of School of Rock, opening July 27th. Our spotlights on Miller Community Theater's production of Rocky Horror Picture Show, running July 21st through the 30th.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, and WDSO 88.3 FM. Our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org, and Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on WDSO 88.3 FM. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight. They're a brand new theater group who's been around just for a short time at the Marshall J. Gardner Center for Arts, and it's the Miller Community Theater. And we'd like to welcome the director, Marty Grubbs, and the producer, Jen Ponson, to our show. And they're going to tell us about their upcoming production in July. Welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Aloha. Hello.
Hello.
Well, Jen, you're the producer first, so you want to be a producer, so I'm going to have you go first, and then we'll get to Marty. Tell a little bit first about yourself, and then maybe the origin story, and then we'll get to Marty.
Okay. I grew up here in Lake Station, just south of Miller Beach, where I live now. So I'm from the area, but I have zero theater experience. I am just a big fan of theater and really kind of fell in love with the idea of being able to go see a show right here in Miller, versus going into the city or going to any surrounding communities, to theaters in surrounding communities. So I met Marty on the beach, and I found out who he is and what he does. And I asked him if he wanted to try and do it here. And he seemed to like the idea.
Excellent. Well, Marty, let's talk a little bit about your origin story then.
Sure. So I'm from Central Indiana. Been in theater for a million years. I was at Highland High School for many years as the drama director there. Then I went back to my community, and I was back at Muncie Civic Theater for many years. And then I came back up here to Northwest Indiana because most of my friends and I have family also that live up in this area. So I returned to this area and then moved to Miller in 2020. And as Jen said, we met, and I was looking for something to kind of take up some of that extra time, and also to balance out. I believe in life balance. So I have a day job, and then my night job, I look at it as the arts. So having that time off and the after hours is definitely something that I focus the arts on. So I loved the idea of doing a show here in Miller. It's a great community, very supportive of the arts. And so when we started talking about doing a show, they were all on board. We, of course, did the Mad Women's Cabaret. That was our first show last year. It went very well. We did have to cancel the second weekend simply because of COVID, but we're plugging ahead now. So our summer musical this summer is the Rocky Horror Show. And we're so excited to be doing the show here for this community. They have just taken to it. They're so excited, so pumped up. And then we had a huge response, too, from community members who wanted to, not only from our community, but from other outlying communities, too, that wanted to be a part of the production. So we've had really good response across the boards.
Oh, it's just so much fun and wild. So
it is. It's very crazy, a little edgy, but this community is okay with that. And so we're excited to be doing it for sure.
Yes, so does the audience, can the audience come in costume?
They can absolutely come in costume. We won't be doing any of the props, none of the rice or anything like that, no throwing of toast or anything like that. But we are encouraging people, if they want to come in costume, they're more than welcome to come in costume.
Do you also have younger actors in this? Is that part of the community theater?
No.
No.
Not this one. Well, no, this one
well,
had to be.
Yeah, I guess not specifically this one, but.
15 for this one. Now, we are doing a Christmas show, and we'd love to come back once we get a little closer to that. We'll be doing the very middle of November, we're doing Christmas Through the Ages, and it's a family-friendly show. And there are actors in that are younger. They don't necessarily have to be children, but right. it will be a family-friendly show. This summer, though, not really family friendly. This one's an 18 and above, for sure.
So, Jen, Marty partially answered that question, but what's your vision as producer for future shows? I know you'll work with Marty as far as show selection, but and also talk about the resources at the Gardner Center to do a show.
Well, the Gardner Center is not a theater, so unfortunately, we're without a home right now. But we wouldn't be able to be doing any of this without Miller Beach Arts and Creative District, who has taken us under their wing, and we're functioning as programming for Miller Beach Arts and Creative District at this time. Obviously, our long-term goal is to be our own entity, our own nonprofit, and find a home. And I've heard it through the grapevine that the auditorium at Wirt High School is being considered for a rehab. So fingers crossed. Aww. That will be something that maybe falls in line.
Wow,
with
that
the
has
stars.
Great potential.
Yeah, I'm very excited with the prospect of our future. It's been extremely well received in this community, and also, like Marty says, surrounding communities. This cast is 19. Seven of the cast members are community members, and the rest are, you know, various theater people in different ages. Age ranges, but it's been so well received with the community that I think that our future hopefully is secure.
Well, excellent. You know, there's so much talent in the area that congratulations on giving another venue for that to shine through for our area.
Thank Definitely. You.
Well, we just have like a few moments left. We want to give you a chance to tell us about the dates, cost, and obviously we just discussed the location, but go ahead, whoever wants to pick it up.
Yes. So July 21st, July 22nd, July 28th, 29th, and 30th are the show dates. We have sold out completely our first weekend, July 21st and 22nd, completely sold out. And our matinee show on July 30th also sold out. So there are only tickets remaining for the July 28th and 29th show, and they are $20 a piece. And you can find them on Miller Beach Arts and Creative District website.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air Spotlight. That's Marty Grubbs, director, Jen Ponson, the producer. Rocky Horror, July 20th through the 30th at the Marshall J. Gardner Center for Arts. Thank you for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you so much.
A Spotlight Extra. Mark Guarino will be doing a book signing of his new book, Country and Midwestern, The Untold Story of Chicago's Pivotal Role as a Country and Folk Music Capital at Hammond's Paul Henry's Gallery on Saturday, July 22nd. Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
Hey, this is Kevin Friend, a singer-songwriter from DeRegion, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Ish Mohammed to Art on the Air. Ish is a self-taught artist. His work is post-graffiti abstract expressionism and has been exhibited nationally and internationally in galleries, museums, and site-specific installations. He is one of the founders of Crazy Indiana Style Artists, a talented group of graffiti artists. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome. Hi, Ish. It's good to see you.
Thanks. It's an honor to be here.
Oh, we loved having you. Well, Ish, I think a lot of people would know about you. They probably heard your name around the region and the arts community, but maybe want to delve into like your background a little bit, which I find very unique and everything. So I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about yourself.
It all started back in the... Well, I'm first generation Puerto Rican. We call it born on the mainland. So my parents, they grew up in Puerto Rico. My mom in Arecibo, which is a beach coast, the northwest side of the island, and my dad, he grew up in Ceiba, Rio Bajo, in the mountains, which is on the east coast. The east coast, beautiful tropical mountains, farming, all that. So they moved to the east coast of the United States. My mom, the way her family ended up here was my grandfather was a migrant farmer. So seasonally, he'd go to Bayonne, New Jersey to pick tomatoes, and then he'd go back home. So that's some, you know, I always find that interesting because you always hear of other nationalities or being migrant farmers. But in the East Coast, a lot of Puerto Ricans were migrant farmers. So that's where how my mother ended up in the East Coast. And then my dad, he moved out here. His mother went before him and moved to New York. And so my dad followed her shortly after. And they met in Lower East Side, New York City. Yeah. And that's where I was born. And my childhood was very bilingual, you know, with my parents speaking Spanish in a totally Spanish-speaking environment, very Puerto Rican environment. But I grew up in the Lower East Side, you know, right next to Little Italy, right next to Chinatown, right next to the Hasidic Jewish communities. So I grew up just seeing a whole bunch of different stuff and different people in different ways and everybody speaking a different language. So yeah, we're in the, you know, when you always hear speak English, you're in America, but that's not the America that I knew as a child. Everybody I knew spoke something else first. And then English was like the common language that everybody communicated together with. Yeah, Lower East Side, New York, a lot of graffiti, a lot of street art. You know, you're not too far from Soho. And as a little kid, I had a crazy amount of freedom. I think about it now. I don't know what's wrong with my parents.
We left in the morning and didn't get home until dark, really.
Exactly. So we would literally, so long as I made it home by sunset,
questions asked.
No questions asked. So every day was like, okay, what's our next adventure, if any, you know?
Unless a neighbor told on you. That was like the only, like, sometimes the neighbors would say, you know, where I saw them.
Oh, yeah. Because one time they did, you know, they did tell my parents that I was jumping rooftops. Which is, you know, I'm 8 years old. Yeah, they should have told me. They should have told on me, you know? Rooftops, you know? Which is in the city, you know? But I guess for me, my introduction to art was hip hop. And I love hip hop, how it started. It was literally formed by teenagers. It was literally formed by, in my opinion, first generation born on the mainland, whether you was from the Caribbean Jamaican, Haitian in Brooklyn or the Bronx, Puerto Rican, Dominican, you know, it just seemed like hip hop was this nice way to create and form a style and a language that was a little bit more universal, in my opinion, than what was currently the trend. So that's why you'll hear some hip hop, it's got a lot of R&B. Some hip hop's got, you know, I'm talking about the early stuff, got a lot of disco because disco was hot, you know?
Right.
Or they just got a lot of congos and bongos, you know, because that's
and that. Dancing.
Yeah, dancing.
Music and dancing.
Music and dancing and style. I just think about that. Just style. We most of us were poor, so we had to find ways to look cool. So we kind of fashioned ourselves differently to kind of stand out and look cool. So that's where the sneakers with the super fat laces came in. You know, that's where the colorful pants. That's where you just found ways to just stand out a little bit amongst your peers, you know, because you are in New York City, it's like millions of people there, you know. So that's for me, that was my introduction to art. I'm thankful for my dad who loved keeping close ties with all his family and all my mom's family. So we would always go visit family. So I had family in the South Bronx. I had family in Bed-Stuy. I had family in Hoboken, New Jersey, family in Philly. So we was always visiting family. And at that time, when the parents visited their cousins or the aunts and uncles or the kids, it's like, all right, go play outside.
You know? Go away.
You know, so sometimes, you know, yeah, go ahead.
So within that family, so were you a musical family? Like, has that been passed down generationally, like art and music in some sort of, like, were you seeing relatives and family members creating either music or art?
I'd say, my grandfather was very religious. And my mom, she was a member of the Pentecostal church, Iglesia de Dios. Very, you know, pretty conservative for a Christian group. You know, they long dresses, you know, they wear veils and all that. So it was pretty conservative. And, you know, one of the things was music. You know, they always played music. And so I'd say that was my introduction to music. My grandfather built musical instruments. So he built like a cuatro, which is a traditional Puerto Rican guitar. He built other instruments, and he was known both in New York and in Puerto Rico as a musician. So the music part probably from my grandfather. The art.
Yeah, it's amazing what we absorb. We don't realize we're absorbing it when it's just around us and part of our, you know, family. But these influences.
And you know. I guess it was a very inclusive environment, you know, when the band played. I remember as early as 4 years old, I got one of my grandfather's guitars and playing with the church band, you know. You know, was I playing anything? Probably not, but you couldn't tell me that back then, you know.
No, the intent is there.
Yeah, and from my grandmother, my dad's side, she was a doodler, and she grew up very native. And by native, I mean Native American, you know, very, very Taino, very in the mountains. So she doodled a lot. She just was super creative in her own way, you know, in her own kind of bohemian New York City kind of way. At least that's the way I translated it. Because I really didn't see her on the island. I always saw her in New York, you know? Man, thanks for letting me share this, because this is good. My grandmother, she would take us everywhere. She was not scared to ride the subways. So she would take us to all these parks, like New York City, just like nothing, you know, and we just go play at a park and all right, we'll either catch a train or walk back home. And, you know, New York in the 70s and the 80s, it's, you know, it was different than it is now, especially the Lower East Side, you know. So I'd say for me, that played a strong part in my identity. And going to school, hip hop, being created in real time by youngsters just a couple years older than me. You know, I'm in elementary school, but you got junior high school kids, high school kids, learning how to DJ on a turntable, practicing breakdancing moves, you know, writing the name on a wall. And that's my first, there's a saying, if I can see you, I can be you. Mm-hmm. And here I am as a child seeing these people doing all this creative stuff. Not perfect, but good enough for us to build off of. And fast forward today, 2023, hip hop is celebrating its 50-year anniversary this year. So it's super interesting how that evolves.
I was curious, any particular hip hop artists that you enjoyed, like, you know, like in the early hip hop?
You know, there's so many to name. And let me back up. Hip hop has different elements, right, Larry. So you got the rapping, you got the DJing, you know, you have the graffiti writers, you have the break dancers. And am I missing one? No, it'll come back. So I'd say, you know, you did have favorites. Like when it came to like breakdancing, I really looked up to Crazy Legs, not just because of how he was moving, how he moved, but just his confidence and his very cool nature about things. As I saw it, you know, I only seen it on TV, you know.
Right.
When it came to like to DJing, I'd say back then it had to be like Grandmaster Flash. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen even like the movie the Wild Style, where he's kind of doing some DJing, and you know, it's in the movies. Well, you know, this literally was filmed in his mom's house in the project, you know, like in the kitchen, you know, because that was his setup, you know. But, you know, and that's how it was. It was, you would set up where you can set up, you know. And MCs, in the 70s, not really. Graffiti writers, I just, you know, there was probably the neighborhood graffiti writer was Lee, L-E-E. So I grew up just seeing a lot, and Lee is known internationally. He was one of the first muralists. He was one of the first graffiti writers to do whole trains, you know. And here he is in my neighborhood just doing handball courts, like, you know, these world-famous handball courts that everybody, you know, looked up to as the epitome of high graffiti art. It's literally a handball court I'm playing handball on, you know what I'm saying? So, and so Lee was somebody I looked up to. And then just the whole movement, you know, the whole practice makes perfect, and just keep doing a lot of it is what I really appreciated it, you know?
So Ish, when you, like, if we can talk about the graffiti, because there's like, there's like two ways to approach it. You know, you've got the train where it's got to be fast and furious, and you kind of just got to go fast. But how do you approach, like, when you're commissioned to do a mural on a wall? And I don't know if you get complete direction or it's just like, just do it, just, you know, whatever comes to you. How do you approach that? And what are your elements that you're adding in, because they just they look so well thought out, and the colors play so beautifully together that I'm just kind of curious what do you do when you first approach that blank wall?
When I first approach a blank wall, it's now in my later years, both are getting real parallel. Like it's almost like the same approach. And it's, for me, graffiti writing just the way I practice my art, the way I fellowship with my peers. It's like it's an urban sport, very similar to golf, in the sense that, you know, you're practicing in the range, your driver, you're practicing your chipper, you're practicing. So you think you got a good handle on the clubs, until you get to that that first hole, which is that wall, you know, and now you got to kind of play the game with your peers. So now, okay, I'm at the wall with my cans. I've been practicing. I've been sketching. I've been doodling. Okay. But now it's game time. Let's see what you got.
Yes. Truth now.
Yeah. And it's very much like golf in the sense that, you know, you're giving each other a hard time, but you're also fellowshipping, you know, you're supporting each other and you are keeping tabs. There has to be a winner. Yeah. So when I do my murals now, it's very similar. I really, you know, I really appreciate when they give me a loose direction. I just assisted with the Arts Hammond Association this past weekend. We did Merge Walls, and we brought 25 artists to wrap the Merge building in Hammond, Indiana, 5920 Holman Avenue. And it was nice. You know, we had support from the city, which is nice for them to trust the organization to pull off a successful and safe event with some beautiful artwork, you know? So I had full artistic license on the wall. So whenever I get full artistic license, I always say, well, you're going to get something good because I'm always going to try something I don't do, you know? Yeah, I don't. And the only reason I like doing that is because it's still fun. It's still challenging.
Right.
Something that I know, then it's just technical. You know, it's just, let me just do, it just becomes a technical approach to making art versus the whole challenge of, oh, why did I put pink there? Now what am I going to put next to that pink, you know? But, you know, so that's how I approach murals when I get full artistic license.
Uh-huh. The collaboration with Jiffy Lube and the mentoring, is that a process that you enjoy, the mentoring of, you know, younger artists?
I do, because I'm getting older. And, you know, it's just, I don't want to leave and not setting up a foundation or a platform for other artists to come and follow. You know, hopefully I can create a model that other artists can follow or can use for their practice, their career. And so I love working with youngsters. It's a weird one because, you know, I'm in my 50s, so 20-year-olds don't necessarily want to hang out with 50-year-olds, you know? So how can I get these 20-year-olds engaged and interested? I'm open to opinions, Larry.
Well, I think you're just by doing that type of art. What I was going to ask you in your resume, you studied electrical engineering, which is kind of a very disciplined way in another way, but, first of all, tell us a little bit about that, but also, when did you pick up the first can and create your first piece of art or graffiti?
Well, my first tag was probably in second grade. Yeah. So, you know, and this was all of us, my whole little clique. I was all the second graders. We all picked up a name, had a marker, and just wrote, scribbled it in the bathroom wall, you know, or in the park. So then, actually picking up a can wasn't until I was a teenager.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So I'd say I was maybe 13 when I actually picked up a can and did graffiti. What was the
Well, and the other part is electrical engineering. How did you get steered into that as a completely different discipline?
Well, it's funny because I grew up pretty dysfunctional, you know? Just the way growing up here in Northwest Indiana, single mother household, and just once again, a lot of freedom. And so I was very, you know, I consider myself smart. I took all the college prep classes, you know, I'd show up once a week and do good on the test. So I was a teenage dad. So I had to leave. I went and joined the army. You know, I came back a decorated soldier from Operation Desert Storm, you know? So I used my GI Bill. And at the time, I had three children, and one on the way married, and I'm like, well, man, I got to get a degree that I know I can get a job when I graduate. You know, so I chose engineering because with engineering, you know, you could either be an engineer or you can, you know, there's a lot of management opportunities, so you don't have to just be an engineer. So that's why I chose that degree. And while going to school, I just kind of joined student organizations so I could learn the soft skills that's needed. You know, how do you get people engaged? How do you create a group, you know, to go after one thing? You know, when you would think in college, all you should be worried about is your degree. But no, you got to figure out how to network, because these future graduates that are next to you, they can either be your next boss or your next lead, you know? I got my engineering degree. I've been working for NIFSCO now, going on 18 years. So I'm very blessed.
Any future art projects coming up? We're recording this in the middle of July, but what projects that you have in mind down the road here, maybe into late summer, early fall?
A lot of my projects now are more art advocacy. So I know with Arts Hammond Association, we want to give the Man of Steel in Harrison Park a facelift, you know, fix him up, paint him up. Vice president of the board for the New Brunswick Center for the Arts. So we got the Arts Fest coming up in August. So I'm leading the committee for the Arts Fest. So just want to make sure we have a successful event there. So that's my year. I got a show in Zobie in September that I'll be doing it with Gary Juarez. And that'll be fun. And so, yeah, just staying busy, you know, yeah.
Sounds great. Well, you know, how can people find your art online, social media and things like that? Let us know how, and maybe reach out to you to maybe they have a project for you.
On Instagram, I'm at Ishrock. It's a blue goose icon. On Facebook, it's Ish Muhammad. I don't know what's on there. And my website's ishmuhammad.com.
Excellent. You know, Ish, we've been trying to get you on the show for some time, and you have shared so much of your life story, which I find fascinating. And I'm glad you took time to your busy schedule to slot us in. That's Ish Muhammad, artist, Northwest Indiana. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your art journey.
Yeah, it was fabulous. Thank you so much.
Thanks. This was fun.
Art of the Year listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com.
Hi there, this is Public Radio theme composer BJ Lederman, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Ali Shinkin, Holly Laird, Courtney Palace, Ali Sipra, and Danny Sheffield to Art on the Air. They're here with the Highland Parks Performing Arts Group, and they're here to talk about the upcoming performances of School of Rock on various dates at the end of July and beginning of August, taking place at the Highland Main Square Park in Highland, Indiana. Thank you all for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome. Hi. Gathering of the group.
It sure is. And some of them I have associations with. But we'll talk about that. We're going to start with you, Ali Shinkin. You are the director. And of course, last season got an award for Little Mermaid. So tell us a little bit about your quick background before we get in the show, and then we'll introduce the other guests.
Hello, everyone. My name is Ali Shinkin. So I actually know Lab. He was my very first director back in high school. I graduated from Munster High School. When I did the assistant student director in 2016 for Cinderella. So that was my first time getting my foot in the door with directing. And then my senior year, I did Tarzan, where I was a student director with actually Courtney's husband, Ray Palace. That's where I kind of realized, because I can't sing. I feel like everyone here can attest to that. I'm a horrendous singer, but I still wanted to participate. So I did a little bit of directing there. And then my first time directing without having anyone hold my hand was in 2019, where I did Willy Wonka. Danny was actually my Grandpa Joe. Courtney was my vocal director for that show as well. And then we were going to do Seussical in 2020, but then COVID happened. So, and then in 2021, we did The Little Mermaid, where I met Holly. She was one of my mer sisters. And we also, well, we tied with another production, Genesius Guild. We tied with Genesius Guild for Best Musical, which honestly, I'm just happy that we won, even tied, got nominated, because Highland Parks hasn't really been even nominated for many things. So even just to get that award was very special. And I have a lot of acting behind me for both on stage and in front of the film. I also did Expedition Unknown with the Discovery Channel, where I got to be on cable, which was fun. That was in 2021. I got to portray John Dillinger's fiance. So I just have a lot of behind me at such a young age that I'm very grateful for. But I am excited for this year's production of School of Rock. And I don't want to take too much time away of talking about myself, because I have a wonderful cast and crew that honestly saved my behind a bunch of times. So I want them to be able to have the spotlight on them.
Well, thank you, Allie. Well, we'll move on to Courtney in a second, but we did put you in musicals on stage. I did encourage you to do that. So we did actually get you on stage. But Courtney, tell us about your background for us.
So I am actually a middle school choir teacher. I teach at Kaler Middle School in Dyer. I just finished my 13th year teaching music. And I started doing theater when I was in high school. I was part of musicals my sophomore year through my senior year. And then I was involved in community theater through the Ross Summer Musical Theater for probably about 10 years. Before I got married and had children. And now it's a little harder to be on the stage. So I've kind of taken on more of a behind the scenes role. So I have been with Highland Parks since Willy Wonka with Allie. And then I did Little Mermaid and last summer's Joseph. And then I also, with Holly actually, direct the theater company at Kaler Middle School. It started out as actually just a spring play we were supposed to do, and we have now expanded it to actually have one of the very few junior thespian troupes in Indiana. And yeah, that's about it.
So Holly, can you tell us about you?
So I'm relatively new to the on the stage and behind the scenes stuff of theater, but I was raised at a theater. My mom actually did theater all throughout high school. Through Lake Central. So I was raised around it, but just recently in the last few years, started doing things with me and my kid. We were both in The Little Mermaid and then last year's Joseph, and my kid's actually doing tech this year for us for School of Rock. And like Courtney said, I work at Kaler and I'm actually the nurse there. And we run the theater program there together. It's when I first started helping and kind of took over as the assistant, it was just a little thing. And we've taken time and worked with the kids and worked with each other. And like Courtney said, we're one of the few junior troops, thespian troops in the area. And that's something that we're both very proud of.
Yeah, that's so wonderful. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, let's move on to the other Allie, Allie Sipra. Tell us about your involvement, your history, theater, and otherwise.
I have very little theater history. As a child, I did a couple of community theater things just as ensemble, and I did maybe two plays in high school. But that's really it. I auditioned for this because my daughter wanted to get into it, and so we both auditioned together. So it's her first time, and it's my first time in more than 20 years.
Oh, that's so exciting. I'm so glad you both got chosen.
Let's move on Danny. To you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and everything like that.
All right. So I am a current student at Indiana University Bloomington. I'm studying film, television, and digital production. And my involvement in theater goes back to seventh grade. Actually, the first year that I went to Griffith High School, and it was the first year that Griffith introduced a middle school theater program. And I've pretty much participated every year since that. My first show with the Highland Community Theater Group was in 2018, before Willy Wonka. I was in the production of Sleeping Beauty that was put on. And pretty much every year since, I've been involved in some form. I acted up until Little Mermaid, and then I decided to run sound that year, and the year afterwards with Joseph, I ran sound as well. And I just kind of had a change of heart again for this show and decided to audition.
Very good. So tell us about the choice of show, a school, and tell us a little bit about the show. And I'll let either Allie or Courtney pick that up and tell us the history of the show, and then also some of the things you're doing in production and how long you've been in rehearsal, things like that.
Yeah, I can start. And then if, you know, either Holly or Courtney want to add anything else, I can definitely talk about the picking of the show, which he's not here right now, but we call him like our producer. But he is basically our boss over at Highland Parks and Recreation. So when we were choosing a show back in, oh goodness, we started early November, right? We started
it was
pretty
very early.
Early
this time. Yeah.
Yes.
It was definitely before the holidays.
Yes. It was before the holidays. We were just kind of getting a list. So my boss, Eric, he sent me a list, and he said, okay, we cannot do these shows that we've done for the past 20 years. And there was a lot on there. You know, like I was thinking about doing Wizard of Oz because that's just an easy, I personally think it's an easy one to do, but it's very popular. It will get the crowd out. But, you know, we did that like 9 years ago. So I was just like, okay, great. We can't do that. Which made it very challenging because a lot of these kid friendly shows we couldn't do because they were on that list, but I think it was a fun challenge. So I was creating a list, and my boss, who has, he doesn't have much theater experience. Like he plays the guitar. He's just very passionate. I adore Eric. Eric, I know you'll be listening to this. We all adore you. he was just like, what about School of Rock? Like, I love that movie. That movie's so great. Like, I see that it's a musical. Let's do it. And I was like, oh, you know, like, what? I don't know how popular it is, but we can add it to the list. Let's see if we can get the rights. And so I was just like, and then I would just be like, I'd send him musicals. I was like, can you see if we can get the rights to this? Get the rights to this. He goes, okay. Oh, by the way, School of Rock came back and we got the rights. So if we want to do it, and it just kept going back and forth. And then finally, like, the three of us, Holly, Courtney, and I, we were talking, and we were going between two different shows, School of Rock and then Percy Jackson, the musical. And basically we agreed that if the kids did not have to play their instruments, and if we had a track behind, then we would do School of Rock. And I'm not going to get into any of that drama that happened. Because needless to say, we have a pit this year, which is something that is not, I don't even remember last time, Highland had a pit. But yeah, we ended up picking School of Rock. I don't know if Courtney or Holly want to talk about what the show's about.
Well, one of the questions I was going to throw out, and this will, I'll start with Courtney, is about the challenges of doing a live pit. Now, I'm going to say as a disclaimer, I was part of the founding member of Main Square Players way back in the 80s where we did do live musicians. There were no tracks really available. But tell us about the challenges, and then we'll also talk about the challenges of doing outdoor theater. Courtney?
Yeah, so one of the big challenges with a pit goes along with the challenge of being an outdoor theater is just making sure all of the pieces are going to come together. We had a bit of a search trying to find the musicians for this show because it is a very unique pit for this show. It's not like a typical orchestra you'd see for something like Rodgers and Hammerstein or something like that. It's basically a rock band with two keyboardists and three guitars and a bassist and someone on drum set. And it's just a much more unique group of musicians that we had to find. So I know one of the things that is definitely challenging, and this is probably going to be a challenge for us, is that outdoor aspect of balancing sound with our cast on stage who are mic'd, and then balancing the pit
with the traffic on Ridge Road. That's what I think is going to be the most interesting thing about having that live pit. But I'm really excited since it is something new and different for us. I think it's going to be a great experience for all of the people in the pit, because I think a lot of them, this is probably one of their first experiences playing for a show like this. And, you know, our cast members who have been with us for so many years, they haven't experienced this yet in this capacity. So it should be pretty interesting.
Oh, I was just going to say, just to kind of like chime in how you said, like, this is the pits, like some of their first time. I believe that the only person that has pit experience is Andrew Rapata. I think maybe the sisters have some experience playing in pit, but they're mainly on stage. But other than that, like Alex Ramirez, he hasn't been in, you know who Alex is. He hasn't been pit, is a drummer for a band. And then our other guitarist is a dad that's to one of the girls in our cast. So we only have one person that has actually done like musical pit before, which is, it's kind of exciting.
Very exciting.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM, and WDSO, 88.3 FM.
That an energy.
So, Holly, tell us a little bit about some of the challenges of being outdoors, besides mosquitoes.
I mean, yes, absolutely. The bugs in that area can definitely be more pesky than some other places in the area. But I mean, kind of piggybacking off what Courtney said, just the sound itself, you know, we don't have, you know, a theater that, you know, you have a wall to keep it all enclosed, you know, we're fighting with outdoor, you know, sounds and things that are out of our control. And that's, I remember having been on the stage the last 2 years, that's one of the things that's kind of hard to let go as a performer, is there's so many things, you know, people driving on Ridge and honking because they see people performing in lights and all of this stuff, you know, and that's one of the challenges. And, you know, we do have some young kids in the cast, you know, and it's very much, you know, like that, the Disney movie, you know, with the dog where he's like, oh, squirrel. And they're like, oh, sounds, cars, you know, things like that. So, you know, kind of reeling them back in and making, you know, bringing their focus back in can be, even us as adults, sometimes we all just kind of every once in a while, you know, let it go, let that attention slide. But it's, you know, I really do feel like we have a good cast and crew, and, you know, we like to laugh and have fun, but when it comes down to it, we all like to pull it together and put on a show. And I really do think that we have a great show coming everybody's way.
Allie has trouble anytime someone's walking a dog in the park. We lose our director. So.
I was going to say, there, how we always have to get the cast, I feel like Holly's always trying to get my attention, because I'm always just going all over the place.
So, Danny, have you had experience singing outdoors?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. That just kind of comes along with the previous performances I've had with Highland. It definitely, there definitely is kind of a learning curve, I've noticed. If it's your first time performing in a space like this, it's different. Especially just, I think the thing that I noticed most is depending on like what our sound setup is, you know, you'll be singing and then you hear it echo, you know, 300, 400 feet off. You hear it bounce off the houses and the cars and stuff. And it's the scope of it is usually way bigger than I feel any auditorium performance would be.
So how do you compensate for that? What are some of your tips?
I guess definitely it's just kind of, and this goes for any sort of music performance, I suppose, is just kind of really locking in with I guess really just like watching Courtney, you know, locking in with your director, who is conducting the pit and also in a way conducting us on stage as well, and making sure we are listening to what's happening on stage and in the pit rather than what's going on out in the crowd.
Yeah, the big solution is in-ear monitors, but I don't think that's going to be in the Highland Park's budget there. So,
no. Unfortunately not.
No.
Yeah, and you have the big churches on each side, OLG and the Methodist Church, and they, I know that always caused big reflections.
So, Allie, have any of the rehearsals been outside yet? How are you preparing?
Well, last night was the first time that we went through the Queen of the Night outside with the whole cast listening to me. So that was fun. It's been interesting. I think I'm glad to hear Danny say that, because when I was singing, I felt like I didn't think that I was very, very loud, but it really carries, especially all of those high notes. And I finished singing and I still heard myself singing. So, yeah. So we've been outside this week and it's very helpful. I'm glad that Allie and Courtney and Holly have taken us outside now rather than waiting until a week before, because I think it would have been too much of a shock at that point.
Yeah, you'll be comfortable by the time performance.
It's a whole new environment performing outdoors, and especially where you're out in the middle of, basically a square area that cars and everything going by. So I'll back to Courtney for a minute. How long have you been in preparation? You know, musically, usually how these work is you actually have to start earlier, not necessarily even rehearsing, but just going over scores and things. So tell us about that process a little bit.
So as soon as the books came in, our boss, Eric, texted me, was like, when can you come get this stuff? So as soon as I could get in, I went and got the books so I could start learning the part. So as soon as we got the scripts, I think it was probably late April, because I know it was right around the time that Holly and I closed Matilda Jr. at our school. I was literally diving into the music for School of Rock right after that. So I've been working on the music for this since May, and then I just recently started going through my score once we found out that I was conducting a pit. So I've been going through the score, and Andrew Lloyd Webber likes to make things really complicated. So I've been going through and highlighting all of the time signature changes, because there is a song in the show that he changes the time signature literally every measure. Like, it does not stay the same. And if I have to lead a whole group of people on stage and a pit, it's stuff like that that I need to really have my attention brought to. So just going through, marking up that score so I've got everything easily visible to me to make sure I don't mess everybody up, because I kind of take the reins once the show starts.
So, Allie Schenken, tell us about any particular challenges of the show. We've talked about the general challenges of doing outdoor theater there in the Main Square Gazebo, but is there any specific issues that came up in preparation for this show?
I mean, I think the biggest one is having to put together a pit at the last possible second. Because again, like I have no music experience. Like, I don't play any instruments. I was maybe in choir for a semester. So the biggest challenge has been forming a pit, and which we finally have that all together. And of course, like, there's the little things here and there. Like, we are not a typical theater production, you know, like, everything that we do is based on the Highland Parks and Recreation. Like, yes, we call ourselves Highland Performing Arts, but we are affiliated with the Parks and Recreation Department. So we have a small budget. Everything that we get is based on donations for that summer. So you will see that. And we haven't really done this in years past, because it's like a learning experience for us. We're starting to do a lot more donations this year. So we aren't, you know, trying to find money at the last possible second so we can have sets and we can provide props to our actors, instead of putting in our little Slack channel like, hey, do any of you guys have this prop, or can anyone come help build sets for us? So I would say that, you know, another challenge is just trying to make sure we do have the proper budget to put on a great show. And luckily, like, the parents, the cast, the community, they love the Highland show, you know, and I'm not just trying to like say that, like, sit on my high horse. But, like, this has been something even before I started directing, like, they love the Highland show and they want to continue the Highland show. So they will try anything that they can to make sure that this show keeps going on for years. So they are always continuously donating a lot of money for us. They are always, not even like, you know, our cast members or parents, we have random people that will donate just random things to us, which we always try to find ways of utilizing that. Like, at our car wash. Some guy just came through, gave us some towels and said, here you guys go. And we're like, we'll take it. But yeah, I would say that probably is our biggest challenge, is trying to find money. And then obviously the pit, but hopefully that's the least of my concern now.
Hopefully Courtney's got that under control. Well, we have less than a minute left, so we want to give you an opportunity to say what the show dates are and just information about the show, how to get there, and also about setting up chairs and things like that, how that works.
Yes. So the show is July 27th through the 29th and August 3rd through the 5th at Highland Main Square Gazebo at 8:00 p.m. Tickets are now on sale at the Lincoln Center over in Highland. These are VIP tickets. So it's going to be $3 at the Lincoln Center, $5 at performance night. However, general seating is still free to the public. It's just if you want to sit close to the stage, and also we might have some interactions going on in the VIP section this year. So if you want to have that experience, then I would definitely suggest buying a VIP ticket at the Lincoln Center. Either bring a lawn chair or a blanket. And also I suggest bringing bug spray as well, because we always spray it. We always spray it for mosquitoes, but they still find a way.
That's for sure. Well, having done that, it's got a 43-year legacy. Thank you, Allie, Danny, Holly, Courtney, and everyone. Thank you for much. Break a leg on the show. Again, it's School of Rock, and that'll be July 27th through August 8th. Thanks for coming on Art in the Air.
Yeah, have a great time.
Thank you.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art in the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org, and Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on WDSO 88.3 FM. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.